Keep those Eagle names coming in. Name Derek's Eagle at 102.5 The Game. If anything, we're going to award somebody a prize.
Oh, yeah.
Jimmy Buffett tickets and Huey Lewis tickets, New Year's Eve, Bridgestone Arena. But if anything, at least we get amusement during the breaks. We just sit here and laugh at all these names.
Exactly.
Mumford. One I can't even read, which may have been the funniest. Asked if Derek's Eagle was from Louisville. And then they
you
had the name.
Take it from there. Yeah. You take it from there.
Johnny Eagle. Let's see.
I like Pekka Wing.
Pekka Wing. We have that. A lot of Music City Miracle, Music City throwback angles. Otis. Did I say that one already?
I like Otis.
Hot Chicken. Norm.
Come on, Ricky.
Yeah, we got, I mean, so keep them coming in. We'll, at some, let's see, next couple hours, we'll, before we get out of here, we'll award somebody the winner. Oh, here's another one that's pretty funny. I can't say it on the air. Let's go down to Jacksonville. Tony Smith, who we spoke to recently. We got a Jags preview before the season began. He's with 1010XL down in Jacksonville. Tony, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Is it like under your contract to have to mention the Music City Miracle and that 1999 season every time a Jaguars guy is coming on?
Well, we just have to remind Derek because he had been knocked into La La Land before the Music City Miracle happened. So he thought he was in East Lansing when that play took place. And he said, why isn't my jersey?
Jack thought they had it. You sneaky Titans.
Yeah. He asked his trainer why his jersey wasn't green. So he didn't know what was going on. Let's start with our thoughts and prayers are with everybody down in your state. How looks like everything has moved out of Jacksonville. Maybe assess what you guys just went through for us.
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy the last few days, honestly. I know where I was staying through the hurricane, I stayed in town, and where I was staying, I've been in Jacksonville for probably, this is the 13th or 14th storm that I've actually decided to just stay through. None of them quite as big as this one, and I know they were talking about the storm surge, which was the really dangerous part, and I had been in the same place for all of them since I had grown up here, and we've never had any kind of issues with water getting anywhere near our house. And Monday morning I woke up, and I walk outside, and the water is a foot from the door of my home.
Oh, wow.
And it was really scary there. You know, how much higher is this going to get? Luckily it did start draining, so I didn't have any issues, but I know there's a lot of places in town where they didn't get that lucky. And if you're in one of these areas that floods pretty easily, yeah, there's a lot of people that have lost a lot over the course of the last 3 days with Irma coming through. So yeah, the city's in a bit of a recovery mode. It was trying to get back to business as usual today with most people getting back to work and restaurants and all that kind of stuff are back open. But yeah, there's still a lot of work to be done. I know the downtown area around the stadium had flooded pretty bad over the weekend and into Monday. It looks like most of the flooding at least is out of the stadium area. So there was some question about what they were going to do as far as whether they'd play the game here. My guess right now is that Jacksonville and Tennessee is going to be played as scheduled on Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock here.
Yeah, that's interesting. We did get word a little bit earlier today, the SEC putting out that the Vols will indeed travel to Gainesville and take on the Gators Saturday afternoon. And so that was one game that we were trying to figure out what was going to happen. The other is obviously the Titans and the Jags. And kind of looking at the schedule, we were talking about this earlier in the show, it would be a real injustice. It would be easy to flop because the two teams haven't met. I know they play again at the end of the year, flop their home dates, but that would mean Jacksonville would start off their season 4 of their first 5 games on the road. That would probably be a tough road.
Yeah, they don't, I'm sure they wouldn't be very interested in doing it. Look, you got to do what you got to do in these kind of situations. So if it was bad enough, and I don't think it is down at the stadium right now, but if it was bad enough that they had to switch them, or I've even heard the idea of maybe playing at week 8, which I think would be a mistake too, because that's Florida-Georgia weekend here, and who knows what kind of shape the field would be in. But you do what you have to do when this kind of stuff comes along. And the important thing is that people are safe and that the city continues to recover. It seems like Jacksonville is already bouncing back to its feet pretty quick after this storm. Again, not to say that there aren't areas that are really in trouble right now, but the city itself seems to have bounced back pretty quick. So, again, my guess is this week's game is going to be played at scheduled 1 o'clock Sunday afternoon at Everbank.
Well, that's good to hear that sounds very positive on now that everything has moved out. We're obviously very sensitive to that subject matter here in Nashville. We went through, obviously, an historical flood here back in 2010, so understand it. And I've been thinking about you guys. So was that – I can't imagine, even for you being as close to the team, covering the team, I know we talked to you before the season, but did you expect to see, you know, not only a victory in Houston, but in the fashion that they did it?
No, would be the simple answer to that, right? I mean, there's no way to expect the Jags to go into Houston and do what they were able to do on Sunday. Now, was it a very, very nice, pleasant surprise? Sure, and it sets up a lot of things for this Jaguars team going forward. I cannot remember, honestly, the last time that this entire city has felt this good about their football team. And, you know, the Titans came up here for Week 16 last year, and the Jags really took it to them in that game. Tennessee had a lot on the line. Jacksonville had nothing on the line in that game. And now beating Houston the way they did last week sets it up where Week 2, the Jaguars and the fans of in this city can sense just how a win this week allows them to take control of the AFC South early in the season with the way Houston looked, with how miserable Indianapolis looked without Andrew Luck in that offense, and when is he going to be back? If he even comes back this year, does Indianapolis decide, look, let's just keep him on the shelf if it continues to look the way it does right now, and they can't even be competitive in a game without Andrew Luck? It would seem like the most direct competition for the division would be the Tennessee Titans, and if the Jaguars take care of business at home this weekend against Tennessee, you're 2-0 in the division, and you've beaten the two teams that most were predicting to finish up on top of the AFC South. So it's a huge week. Despite the storm, you can feel the excitement in this city as it starts to rev up here over the last couple of days. I think it's going to be a crazy atmosphere by the time we get to the home opener on Sunday afternoon.
How legit is this defense? Obviously, they were very impressive Sunday. We've talked about it enough on this show. They have spent a lot of draft picks and a lot of money trying to build up that defense, and everybody's been wondering, when is it ever going to come together? It looked like it came together in Week 1. Do you think that is truly what they have on the defensive side of the ball?
I think it's a yes and no. Look, they set a franchise record with 10 sacks. They're obviously not going to do that every week, but I think they are very much improved on that side of the ball. You could see from a coverage perspective just adding A.J. Boye to the mix with that Jaguars secondary and having him and Ramsey basically be able to play sides and feel comfortable with whoever they're going to match up against. They didn't match up Ramsey, who may be one of the top five corners in the league in the very near future, against DeAndre Hopkins because they spent the money on A.J. Boye and they trusted that money and just played sides with those guys, which I think they're going to do a lot this season. The young pass rushers on this team really stepped up. So Yannick Ngakoue, Dante Fowler Jr., obviously big to see those guys be able to pressure the pocket against Houston. They're not going to face a whole lot of offensive lines that are as bad as what Houston put on the field. But what Jacksonville hasn't done, again, in such a long, long time, is be able to take advantage of that kind of thing. It's just not something that they've been able to do. Even against teams that they ought to dominate, they haven't. This week they did. And that's a really positive sign for a defense that already felt like it was taking a really positive step in the right direction. This was huge this week. And for the confidence of this football team, again, I don't think they'll play another offense that is as out of sorts as Houston was this weekend, this season, and that includes the schedule where they play the Jets. I don't think the Jets' offense will look that bad in a game this season when they go up against the Jaguars. But they took full advantage of it and really embarrassed the Texans in their home opener.
We'll talk with Tony Smith, 1010XL, talking Jacksonville Jaguars, Titans and Jaguars play this Sunday. Tony, looking at this team, were you surprised with, I guess this is a two-part question. One, the offensive line. Mm-hmm. If you go into a game going against Clowney, Watt, Merciless, you say those three names, you think the quarterback's going to have a very long day. The offensive line is going to have to, you know, really buckle down. If not, they're going to get embarrassed. But if you look at what the offensive line did, a 100-yard rusher, they controlled the clock. Did you expect that from this offensive line? And then Blake Bortles, I know he didn't throw the ball a ton, but he was effective in the times that they allowed him to throw the football.
Yeah, you know, I'll start with Blake a little bit here. I think that was the game plan all offseason, and they've tried to make it clear that that's what they wanted to do. It's why they draft Fournette where they did there at number four. They wanted to be able to run the ball, control the clock, and manage Blake Bortles through games. I mean, and they threw out that number, you know, we'd like to see him throw it 15 to 20 times a game, and we all kind of laugh at that because this is the NFL. You know, you don't win a bunch of football games with your quarterback throwing it 20 times. He threw the ball 21 times this weekend, and they boat raced Houston. So for a week at least, the game plan that they had in place, the blueprint for the offseason, worked exactly the way that the Jacksonville Jaguars wanted it to. I think they're facing a much better offense this week against Tennessee. Blake's going to have to make more plays than he did last week against Houston, but it worked for 1 week against Houston. As far as the offensive line, I mean, no. It was impossible to expect it to look like that, especially going up against the horses that the Houston Texans can throw at you. I had a fan during the game on Sunday that actually tweeted me and asked, which do you think would have been less likely before this game started? And they asked me, do you think the Jaguars win the game or they don't allow a sack? And what I told them was, if the Jaguars don't allow a sack against Houston, they win the game. Because that's the only way Houston can beat you right now, because of how bad they are offensively, is if that defense is making the plays that they need to have happen. Jacksonville, with a rookie at left tackle in Cam Robinson, he was a wall on Sunday. And that's a guy that Nick Saban had told us, coming out of Alabama, is the most pro-ready guy he's ever coached at Alabama. Boy, did he look it on Sunday, stepping into that spotlight against J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney and Whitney Mercilus. I saw John McClain from the Houston Chronicle tweeted out his stat. One of the guards for Houston had a couple tackles because of a couple turnovers in the game from the Houston quarterbacks. So he had two tackles in the game, and he mentioned that that's what J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney combined in their impact in the stat box on Sunday. That's how good this offensive line was this week. I don't know that they can get that out of them every week, but to even know that that kind of thing is in them, I don't think is something that a lot of people in Jacksonville expected, and it's a really, really bright sign for a football team that wants to be able to run the ball, especially with the way Fournette looked in his debut.
Now, how big of a blow is it for them not having Allen Robinson? Obviously, Hearns is still there. Lee is still there. And they got a few other guys that can play, but he was their number one guy. So how big of a blow will it be not having him, not just for this game, but for the season?
Yeah, it's huge. And really, it didn't affect him on Sunday because of how inept Houston was when that turned out to be on offense. But again, you don't win a bunch of games in the NFL throwing it 20 times a game. That's just not the way that it works, and you need to have guys that can catch the ball. Jacksonville has a couple guys that have had success to some degree in the league. Allen Hurns is a guy that's had a 1,000-yard, 10-touchdown season a couple years ago, so he can obviously play. Marquise Lee had a big breakout year last year for the Jags, so he can obviously play. What we don't know about either one of those guys is what it looks like with them trying to make plays without Allen Robinson on the field on the other side, who has been the guy that if someone was going to draw double teams, it was going to be A-Rob. Well, A-Rob's not going to be out there for the rest of the season. So what does it look like for these guys when they are the focal point in this passing game is a big, big question. And really, I don't have an answer for it yet. I know this past week they weren't asked to do much, but they didn't do much. Between all the receivers on this team, Allen Robinson got injured on his first catch of the 2017 season. The other receivers for the rest of the game, that was on the first drive in the first quarter. The other receivers for the rest of the game combined for four catches on Sunday. Allen Hurns had three, and Aurelius Ben had one. Those are the four catches that the wide receiver group had in total on Sunday. So obviously a lot's going to be on their shoulders. And behind them, they're looking at an undrafted rookie in Keelan Cole, who had a really good offseason, but a couple drops in preseason. You're asking for a rookie that wasn't even drafted to step in basically as the number three wide receiver while they wait, hopefully, for Dede Westbrook to get back halfway through the year, who's a guy that they really like to get in the fourth round. But, again, he's not available for half the season. The thought around here is they're going to have to pick up somebody in free agency. But as you guys know, you're not picking up anybody off the street in September that's going to come in and likely have any kind of impact for you in your offense. It's about how good Marquise and Allen Hurns can be. We've seen them be successful in this league before. we'll see what it looks like without Allen Robinson on the field for a passing game that was already expected to struggle with Blake Bortles at the helm.
Now, is this what we're going to see in regards to them running the football? Leonard Fournette getting basically 90% of the carries, and then Chris Ivory, who's proven he can run in this league. He's somewhere around, you know, 10 to 12 carries per game.
Yeah, I think that's the plan because of how much they want to run it and take it out of the quarterback's hand. I think that's the idea for the Jaguars every week. And Leonard Fournette faced more eight-man boxes this week than anybody else in the league. It was on like 60% of his carries. He was facing an eight-man box, still managed to get 100 yards. And if the Jaguars can do that every week, then yeah, they're going to beat a lot of people. Because the defense, while it's not going to play at that kind of level like they did against Houston every week, it's good enough to beat a lot of people if you're going to allow them to run the ball. So yeah, I think the idea is going to be we want to run the ball in Jacksonville. And that means that Leonard Fournette likely is going to be a guy that they want to try to get, you know, that 15 to 20 carry mark. And Chris Ivory is a guy that's going to be somewhere in that 5 to 10 mark on a week-to-week basis. And that's what they want their identity to be. For a week, they could do it at will against the Houston Texans. We'll see what it looks like going up against Tennessee, which I think is a much better test, especially with the weapons that Tennessee is going to be throwing at this Jaguars defense. Houston was just inept. I mean, from the quarterback position, they just couldn't get anything done. They couldn't block anybody. They couldn't run the ball at all. I think Tennessee has a good offensive line. They got the good running game coming here. They got a quarterback that I expect to take a big step up going into his third year, Marcus Mariota, and real weapons on the outside in that pass game. It's a completely different test for this defense in Jacksonville this week.
Tony, last thing. How much of this is the head coach, Doug Marrone? I mean, for some reason, and like I said, I don't know if it's just all these high draft picks coming together this year, but they just looked like a different Jacksonville team. They didn't look like the team that we've seen, certainly under Gus Bradley's watch. There just seemed to be a different look. How much is that attributed to Doug Marrone and his staff, or is it?
You got to give him a lot of credit, right? I mean, he's coached three games for the Jacksonville Jaguars. You guys saw the first one firsthand last year when Tennessee came down here to Jacksonville. That means two out of the three games that Doug Marrone's been the head coach in Jacksonville, they have embarrassed divisional opponents, which is not something Jacksonville has done in a long, long time, right? So, yeah, I think a lot of credit goes to Doug Marrone and the kind of attitude that he has, the emphasis that he puts on discipline and being willing to say the word win like it matters, which is not something that Gus Bradley did during his time here. For him, it was all about a process. And once Doug Marrone took over, he was like, we're not talking process. We're going to talk about what it takes to win games. It's the idea in Jacksonville, which is what the idea should be, I think, around a National Football League team is winning is fun and losing sucks. And if you want to have a good time, then win football games, and because losing is not any fun at all. And that's the kind of attitude that Doug Marrone brings. I think it's paid dividends at least early on in his tenure here in Jacksonville. What that means for this Sunday against Tennessee or for the rest of 2017, I don't know. I do know that you can't get to 2-0 unless you get to 1-0, and the Jags are there right now with the opportunity to host the division rival this weekend and create some space for themselves at the top of the AFC South, which is not something they've been able to say since 2007. It's the last time I think the fans felt this good about this football team.
And he scored huge points from his wife in his postgame press conference, saying the only wild dreams he has is about his wife. So
no doubt.
Husband of the year right there. At least he's got ding, that ding, going ding, for ding, him. Ding. Tony, always good to talk to you. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you down the road.
All right, sounds good, guys. Anytime.
All right, Tony Smith with 1010XL down in Jacksonville, and that's good to hear that seems like everything is okay. They got some work ahead of them this week, but for the most part, Jacksonville got hit pretty hard, but they're going to be all right. And he said he thinks the game is going to go as planned.
Well, the league hasn't given any indication on either way. So if that's how it is now, you kind of lean more toward, okay, they're going to play.
We'll be back. Well, if this is the way you guys are going to participate on Twitter, we may just start doing more Twitter contests than we do. Maybe that'll be a daily thing or every other day. If anything, it'll keep us amused. The problem is, a lot of them I can't even read on the air.
That's
I probably
the best part,
could,
though.
But I would probably get in trouble.
Yeah.
I think. So if I'm questioning it, I'm probably not going to read it. But that doesn't mean you're not eligible.
Yeah. That means we just can't read it.
But actually, it kind of does mean you're probably not going to win because we have to call your eagle by the
right.
name. And if we can't say it, while it's been great enjoyment for us at 1025 The Game on Twitter, we do have to pick a name that we can use on air because we are going to reference your new friend, your new best friend, the eagle, who really hasn't changed anything for you this season to this point.
He has. Yeah,
well, what has he changed?
He's changed some things. More confident now.
Oh, you're more confident. More confident when I think D-Mace, I think someone lacking confidence.
Yeah, more confident. And by that first pick, y'all were thinking like, man, yeah, he's. We need to watch out. This kid's coming up.
Somebody tweeted in Corso for the name of your eagle. Happy Flappy is another one.
How about Snag?
A lot of Otises. We're getting several. Yeah. Otis the Eagle.
Old Otis.
Tangeray. Nosediver.
Oh, my goodness.
How about this one? Flight Risk.
Somebody went old school said Tangeray.
The one that, well, there's not, I shouldn't say the one. There have been several, but there's one I'm dying to read, but I can't.
You can't read it, huh?
No. I'm just not willing to do it. Jimmy Talon.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
Some good
ones
out there.
I think this is going to happen on Sunday. It looks like it's going to be as planned. Okay, you heard my final question to Tony Smith.
Mm-hmm.
How much is this Doug Marrone? Because it feels a lot, the higher, and I don't want this to be taken the wrong way, but this is kind of the way it was here. Let's all be honest, okay? Mm-hmm. When they made the decision to cut the cord with Ken Wisenhunt, which could not have been a better move in the middle of the season, you understand the interim tag. You understand you're not, you just go on and you give it to somebody on staff and you have the interim tag. That's what they did with Mike Mularkey. But then when they came out in the offseason and said, okay, well, we're removing the interim tag. He's the new head coach. It wasn't exactly a warm embrace. It was kind of, well, that's the best. That's the best you can do. I kind of feel like, and then last year they go 9-7. Now nobody says that about Mike Mularkey, right? Everything is, nobody's saying that, you know, why did they keep this guy? Everything's been fine. But like I said, if we're being honest, when they made the announcement he was going to be the head coach, they were removing the interim tag, it wasn't met with great praise. Like, oh, wow, thumbs up, good job. But he's proven, and nobody says that anymore. I kind of feel like Doug Marrone is the same way in Jacksonville, right? As bad as Gus Bradley was bad, very, very bad. He set them back. Doug Marrone, who we like, certainly has ties here in the Middle Tennessee area, well documented, was in Buffalo, Syracuse, done a good job. I don't think anybody was like wowed by the hire of Doug Marrone, right? So they fire Gus Bradley at the end. He coaches the final two games. We don't need to recap the Jacksonville game, the second to last game, which they win. It costs the Titans the division. And they go to Houston, they shred the Texans, so he's won two of his three games he's been the head coach. I don't think right now people are questioning the Doug Marrone hire, at least through one game this season. They look like a different team. Is it because of him, or is it because all these high draft picks are starting to come together?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's Doug Marrone and him getting guys to buy in to what he's preaching. And then it is the talent. Now, you know, Fowler's healthy. Miles Jack. You know, you add Boye. You bring in, different players. Campbell. who had 4 sacks last week. So to me, it's a combination of Doug Marrone, people buying in now, him preaching this, and the guys, the talent that they have finally all being on the field at the same time, finally having, you know, some years up under their belt in this defense. There's only really 2 new guys. I'm pretty sure there are more, but I'm saying that starting unit. That's Campbell and Boye. Everyone else, I think, pretty much played in this defense last year. And then you can't forget the, to me, I think the engine that kind of makes this thing go, and that's Tom Coughlin. I think Tom has proven that he can make a team into a winner. He did it in Jacksonville. He did it in New York when New York was struggling. They won 2 Super Bowls under his watch, I believe. So he has the cachet. He has the skins on the wall. He understands how to build a football team and how to win, especially when your quarterback is inept. You know, what do? You draft Leonard Fournette. You draft a left tackle, and you run the football. So it's a combination of everything. It's a combination of Doug Marrone, the defense finally being able to play together, young talent finally coming on, and then Tom Coughlin. Because, you know, you just
That's
can't
a good
throw
point.
In, you just can't throw anybody in that position. You got to throw somebody in there that understands, you know, personnel and how to put teams together.
That's a good point. Tom Coughlin. He's done a lot of winning.
Mm-hmm.
He did a lot of winning when he was head coach at Jacksonville.
Yeah.
That's the last time they've endured great success is when he was on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. Goes to New York. He wins 2 Super Bowls with the Giants. Now back in Jacksonville in a front office capacity. And it is strange that, it seems like everything's coming together on his watch yet again. I don't think that's a coincidence.
No, there's no coincidences in regards to this. I can see if Tom's never won and, you know, they start off 1-0, then okay, a coincidence. No, this is what he expects to happen. He wants the coaches to hold these players to a higher standard. I believe the players are buying in to what Doug Marrone and the other coaches are preaching, discipline, smart, run the football. Remind you of somebody? Well, Tennessee Titans.
Yeah.
Discipline, run the football, smart players. That's all John talked about.
Let's go to Jerry. Jerry, what's up?
Do you see them, the Titans, improving in the red zone against the Jaguars?
Okay.
And secondly, I tried to enter on Twitter, but for D Mace, I have the ambassador of Quan for your Eagle name.
Thank you, Jerry.
There's some good names. There's some good names. Let me answer the first. Can they improve on their red zone efficiency? You hope they can, but you're going against a much better defense, a defense that knows you. So it's going to be difficult. I'm not going to say they can't, because if they score, you know, one more touchdown, then they improve from last week. So if they score, you know, 14 points, you know, inside the red zone, then they've improved from last week. But it's going to be a tall task because, like Tony said, you have 2 corners that they consider shutdown corners. So they don't have to, you know, roam, you know, move guys. They can just play coverage. And then you got a guy that's coming off 4 sacks, Campbell. You have Miles Jack. You have Fowler. You have guys on this defensive side of the ball that can play. So your job's not going to get easier. You thought, you know, Oakland was going to be a pushover and they pretty much held their own. Well, you know Jacksonville is not going to be a pushover. So maybe that's an added incentive for the Tennessee Titans to go out there and you know, really hone in on what they do from a red zone decision making.
And if you're looking for extra motivation, I mean, Mike Mularkey and his staff could just put up. And I realize Marcus Mariota went down. That was the game he got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Broke his leg. But the game was already in hand.
They never did.
They got boat raced. They lost 38-17. It was never a game.
Nah, I don't think Jacksonville. If you watch the game, Jacksonville was always in control.
Yeah. So if you're looking for motivation there, just bring up anything about that game that cost you the division. I mean, they were never in the game for a Jacksonville team that had nothing to play for other than a brand new coach in Doug Marrone. They've had to face that in the past. Remember, didn't Miami do the same thing?
Same thing
with their tight ends coach, and they moved him to the interim head coach?
Yeah, sometimes. And then the Titans did it to New Orleans.
That's right.
You know?
That's exactly right.
So,
all right, we'll come back. We'll head over to West End. We'll talk to their head coach, Vanderbilt's head coach, Derek Mason. We do that next. Another game, another victory for the Vanderbilt Commodores. 2-0 on the season. And they've just given up 6 points on the year. Very impressive. And they've got a big tilt Saturday night. Better be a great atmosphere over on West End as Vanderbilt is going to host Kansas State, a ranked team coming in. Back here on 3D, Darren and Derek with you today. Donick should be back with us tomorrow. Coach, we welcome in Derek Mason. Coach, how you doing?
Doing well. Darren and Derek just came out of a press conference and ready to talk to you guys. What's going on?
Well, you have to be jacked up about this matchup. This is really cool. This is obviously going to be a front-and-center game. People are going to pay close attention to what happens. Let me start with the defensive side of the ball. I said, you guys, you know, you pitch the shutout on Saturday. You hold MTSU to 6 points. They don't get that till late in the game. You've been kind of the mastermind behind this defense since you've been the head coach over in West End. What, you had some losses last year that had people concerned. It doesn't look like you guys missed a beat at all.
Well, I think every year, you know, you sort of recalibrate, and you got to figure out who your team is. This team is different than the 2016 team. They're driven, and they've got great leadership. They work extremely hard. I mean, I've got a tremendous staff, and all we're trying to do every day is get better. And in that process, man, you wind up getting into the meat of your schedule. When that time has come, we've got Kansas State this week, so we got to get ready to ride.
The guys that came over, the guys that experienced last year, Coach. Yeah, I know you have a whole off season, and after the bowl game, you know, you have some major downtime, and then you have to get geared up again. But because they went through that ride and just really what you guys were able to do at the end of the regular season where it looked like everything came together, kind of the perfect storm, do you think that maybe that helped maybe their confidence and other things moving forward into this season? Or do you say that was last year and this year is a whole new year?
You know, from a confidence and experience standpoint of getting to a bowl game, I thought that was, you know, tremendous for this team. But – you know, it wasn't just about getting to the bowl game. It was about winning the bowl game, and we didn't.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was a lot of growth that took place there. And that growth has really fueled the passion for this 2017 team. This team is stingy, and they work hard. They're really, you know, blue-collar in their approach, and they take no days off. And if you can do that, you can find ways to get better, and that's what they're doing.
You just gave some good descriptions about your team. I was going to follow up with what have you learned thus far about this year's team?
Well, the leadership is strong, and these guys are going to continue to you know, uphold their end of the bargain. What I tell them is this, if I'm working harder than you, then why are you here? So if we're all going to, you know, put our best foot forward, if we're all going to be all in and put all our chips in the middle of the table, well, then let's do that. You know, anything less – to me, would be uncivilized.
By the way, can I steal that?
Yeah.
I'd like to steal that saying. That's very good.
You're not working as hard as me. Why are you here?
Man, yeah, Chase, like get that. Ready. I'm going to use that line on you, okay? So you just get ready.
Oh, boy.
We're talking to Vanderbilt's head football coach, Derek Mason. Coach, what is it that a Bill Snyder coach team does well? They've been able to put up 55 points the last two games, and then, you know, a lot of people might contribute it to the team they were facing, but yet and still, no matter who you face, you got to go out there and you got to play the game.
Right.
What is it that a Bill Snyder coach team does well?
They don't beat themselves. They really embody some of the same things that we talk about. They're relentless. man, on both sides of the ball, they come at you and they don't stop. And, you know, I mean, their special teams has been, you know, one of the best for over a decade. You know, when you look at, you know, man, two teams that have played as good of special teams as any team, two teams in the country, is Virginia Tech and Kansas State. And so with that, they know who they are. Their foundation, Coach Snyder's foundation of you know, your physical offense, good defense, and tremendous special teams has been, you know, their calling card for a long time. That's why even in his second stint, okay, I mean, you still see the DNA, okay, that was probably created, you know, I mean, some 25 or 30 years ago. So I truly believe the foundation has been there for them, and they've never left it. He's never forgotten it, and they've never left it.
Now, talk more about Kyle Sherman. He didn't put up a lot of yards, but you didn't need him to do that. But what he was he was accurate and he was efficient. He went 15 for 18 for 200 yards and four touchdowns. I don't know if you can get any better than that. Maybe throwing, you know, 18 for 18, but that's asking a little bit too much. But just talk a little bit about Kyle, first game, second game, and what you're looking for in his third game.
Well, you're always looking to see progress, and I thought from week one to week two, you know, man, Kyle, you know, continued to stay in rhythm. He didn't force throws, and he continued to, you know, extend plays and find, you know, man, guys open. He went through, you know, his read progressions and sometimes got to the second and third, you know, read. He's throwing the ball with great accuracy, and he's really playing with great confidence right now, and I think all those guys around him, those skilled players, are confident. So, really, it's just been a process. His maturation from week one to week two was what we expected, and we just expect him to be better in week three. You know, with the opponent coming in, you know, in the caliber of Kansas State, obviously they're the number 18th ranked team in the country. You know that the challenges are going to be many. And they're going to look to load the box. They're going to play tight coverage. They're going to make him throw into tight windows. But, you know, that's what he's built for. That's what he's worked towards. And it takes a team to get it done.
Now, how difficult is it for you and the coaching staff when you have a game, as you did this past weekend against Alabama and A&M, where the score gets a little bit out of hand, but then you want to get some young guys in there to play, you want to get some other guys, but you don't want your starters, especially with the big game coming up, to lose that momentum that they have.
Right. We I think what you do is you sort of treat playing time like a caveat. I mean, that's the carrot that you sort of dangle over these guys. That's the piece, you know, I mean, everybody wants to play on game day, but game day opportunities are earned. Mm-hmm. And so you know, I mean, for our veterans, they did what they were supposed to do. We jumped out, okay, and then there was going to be an opportunity for guys, you know, I mean, to get in. During that MTSU game, I put guys in. Guys didn't live up to the standard. We talk about what the standard is. We sort of practice that way every day. This week, they did a much better job of going into the game, okay, and competing, and that's what I'm looking for. I mean, when you don't get very many reps, okay, what you have to do is be competitive. You got to be hungry. And I thought that group went out. You know, I mean, our second and third team guys went out, played hard. They got better. And now, you know, we were able to have some game film to coach those guys off of.
Now, it seems like you have a good problem here. The freshman Wakefield looks like he's going to be tremendous. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Blassing Game is there. Ralph Webb.
Right.
This three-headed monster that you have, if you choose to go that route, it has to be exciting for you.
Yes. Yes. It's exciting. I know everybody wants to talk about Ralph. Everybody wants to talk about Ralph. Ralph's the lead dog. Mm-hmm. He is the lead dog. There's no, okay, he walks and all the rest of those dudes walk behind him. But in that manner, you're also talking about, you know, getting into a season and making sure, man, that you don't wear him down. You know, when you play a schedule or this type of schedule that we're getting ready to get into, starting with Kansas State, okay, man, it's about week in and week out production. And so what you want to make sure of is that, you know, these guys can all carry the load. They can keep us healthy, and they all bring something different to the table. So when you have a stable of running backs who you think can play on Saturdays in the SEC, I think you feel real good about where you're going.
You talked about Bill Snyder, Coach. What about this team you're about to face? I saw earlier today in your press conference you said they're a real physical team, this Wildcat Kansas State team. Is that what jumped out at you, or what jumped out at you in kind of getting prepared for your opponent on Saturday?
Well, I've watched Kansas State over the last two seasons. I mean, I went back this summer and watched the previous 2 years, like just to get a look at who they were and what they've done. And now, this year, looking at their efficiency, looking at the guys on this 2017 Wildcat team that have grown up. I mean, they're a football team that's got juniors and seniors. They got a quarterback. Who's late in his career, who's played games or played in games. They've got receivers and skill players across the board, man, who are dynamic and compete, okay, at a high level. So for me, it's been about, steadily understanding exactly, who they are. And across the board, we've studied their special teams, and they don't have any chink in their armor. There's a reason why they're sitting as the number 18 team in the country, and it's because you don't find any flaws or deficiencies. You're going to get their A game every week, and they always seem to meet the challenge, and it's going to be a great opportunity for Vanderbilt University to step on a big stage.
Well, if you're ever looking for a side business, you need to put these sayings on some T-shirts and sell them. I'll buy them. I'm telling you what, I get inspired just talking to you every week.
Well, these are the everyday conversations that you have with young men who are 18 to 22 years old. We just try to make sure that we can keep it real and make sure we're to the point about real self, not ideal self. Because in this game, all that matters is your tape, because your tape is your resume.
Yeah, good stuff, as always. Hey, we appreciate it. Best of luck on Saturday. We'll certainly be watching. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care.
All right. That is Vanderbilt head coach Derek Mason. Their kickoff, 6:30. Over at Vanderbilt Stadium on West End, 6:30, Kansas State and Commodores. Something's got to give. Mm-hmm. Both teams 2-0. This should be a great matchup Saturday night under the lights. We'll come back with the fourth and final hour. By the way, Derek Mason, our interview with him every Tuesday on the show, brought to you by Jensen Comfort Shoes. Fourth and final hour next.